In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Good afternoon, 3:05. Thanks for listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is In Depth with Francis Rose. I'm Jared Serbu, filling in all week while Francis is on vacation. And on Wednesdays during the 3 o'clock hour of In Depth, we always focus on the Defense Department and the military for a segment we call Pentagon Solutions, brought to you by DRS Technologies. For this week's segment, we're going to bring you a panel discussion that happened yesterday at the Gaylord National Hotel in National Harbor, Maryland, focusing on military children and the education of military children, more specifically. This was from the Military Child Education Coalition's 15th National Training Seminar, a panel discussion featuring Admiral Robert Papp, the Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard, Lieutenant General Daryl Jones, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel, and Services for the Air Force, and Edward Cannon, the Director of Fleet and Family Readiness Programs at the Navy Installation Command. The panel was moderated by Dr. Bill Harrison. He's the Vice Chairman of the Military Child Education Coalition's Board of Directors, and he starts us off.
Panelists, we've spent a day and a morning discussing multiple issues related to the education of our military-connected youth across the world. And I would like to frame our opening question and provide each of you 3 minutes to respond and share anything that you'd like that may not be directly related to this question around the issues that we've been talking about. And as I said, from there, we will move to a question and hopefully dialogue. And I'd like to begin as you were introduced. Considering the stresses of the past decade plus, with deployment tempo, what do you think you've learned about educating the force and educating civilian communities about supporting the unique needs of the military child from preschool to young adult, with all kinds of issues, but to include reintegration?
Well, first of all, thanks to MSEC for having me here today. This is really a treat for me and one of the best things I get to do this week, so thanks for having me up here on the stage. From a service chief's perspective, I think the theme that I'm going to weave in on almost any question you can ask me today is awareness. And I'd illustrate that by telling you a story that goes back to about 2004. I was serving as a commander at the time when I was out visiting units. I had my command master chief with me. We were transiting between units, and we were on the Ohio Turnpike, and we stopped into one of the rest stations, and I was waiting for the master chief. I was in the food court. I was dressed like this, and I looked across the food court, and there was this old gentleman with a ball cap on that said, "Proud Veteran," and he had a little child in his hand, and I knew the look immediately. You know, September 11th, 2001 was still fresh in everybody's mind in 2004. And he started coming across the food court to me. I knew what was going to happen. He comes over. He puts out his hand. He says, "Let me thank you for your service." And I looked him in the eye and said, "You do know I'm not in the Air Force, right?" And look. We had a commandant back in the 70s that thought our uniform looked too much like the Navy, so they chose a new uniform, and now we look like the Air Force. Can't tell you how many times you get stopped on bowling, and they say, "Hi, General, how you doing?" So he got indignant, and he said, "You know, sir, I'm a retired Navy Chief Petty Officer, and I recognize the Coast Guard uniform, and I know what you're doing for our country, and I want my grandson to know as well, so I want to introduce you." Well, that was 2004, and since then, I would probably have shaken thousands of hands in similar situations, but it's not quite as often now. I think there's a lot of fatigue in the country, and not only is there fatigue because of the last greater than a decade of war, but it's also there are fewer people serving. We ran some figures, and at the end of World War II, we had about 130 million people in this country. And at the end of World War II, there have been 16 million people in uniform. Now, we've got a little over 300 million people in the country today. And if you include the Guard and Reserve and the active duty, there's about 2 million people in uniform. So what that means, if you think about it, is at the end of World War II, you could go into a neighborhood and walk down the street and knock on every door. And about every eighth door, you would find somebody who is either in the service or had somebody in their family who was in the service. And I would say those other seven doors, there was probably some familiarity and awareness of people in the armed forces and what they do. Today, if you were to do the same thing walking down the street, you'd have to go to 150 doors.
Wow.
Before you come to somebody who's got a family member in the service or is aware of somebody. And I would say those other 149 doors, there are going to be varying levels of awareness. And it translates its way all the way up to the Congress as well. There's fewer people in the Congress today who have served in the armed forces than at any other time in our history. Back a number of years ago when I was chief of congressional affairs for the service, we had four former Coast Guardsmen up on the Hill. We're down to one right now. So across the country, there is a general dilution of awareness of what military people do, how they serve, and it also relates to awareness and familiarity of what their children go through as well. So at the end of the day, what I see is MSEC helps us to promote and increase that awareness, to keep it fresh in people's minds. Even though our country is fatigued, we need to constantly work to keep our military children in the forefront. And awareness even comes to this group as well. I remember 3 years ago when I was a brand new commandant, Linda came to one of the sessions, and the people up on stage were talking about the four armed services, the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines. And, of course, Linda became a little indignant, just like that retired chief petty officer out there on the Ohio Turnpike. But the great thing today is we've got Barbara Day on the board and others involved here. And I got to thank you for that because you are helping out our service along with the others.
And we've had four senior spouses with us, thanks to Barbara as well. And interestingly enough, that awareness was a major theme in one of the breakout groups with whom I sat yesterday and this morning, and we're going to ask you to close this thing and tell us how to address that. General Jones.
Well, first off, it's great to be here today, and thank you for inviting us. I have a great opportunity to represent our chief and vice chief who couldn't make it today, but I also have a long commitment with MSEC. Mary and I go way back. As I joke, it was an expensive hamburger. My first MSEC event, we were leaving at the end of the day, and Mary invited me to come have dinner with him, and I pull out my wallet at the end. I only had a hamburger, and she said, I got it. So I walked down, and I said, Mary, you didn't need to buy my hamburger to Dr. Keller. And, you know, I said, I can pay for my hamburger. And she said, oh, don't worry about it. And Tony Hill, General Hill's wife, came over and put her arm around me, and she said, Darryl, that's going to be the most expensive hamburger you've ever had in your life. So 4 years later, I guess, I'm trying to work off my hamburger debt. And also, for the record, I'd like to say that I think Admiral Papp looks really, really good.
Yeah.
My neighbor.
Yeah. You know, if Admiral Papp's catchword is awareness, I think mine would be engagement when it comes to how we educate our children. And, you know, I had all the answers when I was young, as all youngsters do. I remember when Holly and I started having children, I said, well, you know, this won't be hard. I mean, I'm a personnel officer. I said, I'll arrange it to where we'll move once while they're in high school, between their sophomore and junior year. It's not that hard. We have two boys. Our oldest son went to four high schools. Our youngest son went to three middle schools and four high schools. So I'm really not that good at being a personnel officer, I guess. But what that taught me was that engagement is really the thing that I think makes the difference. When you go to a community and you go to a base, if the base is engaged with the schools outside the gate, if they don't have one on the post, which is really rare these days, if the base is engaged and the leadership is engaged, it makes all the difference. You ought to be starting your school year with a get-together with all of the teachers in the area that teach your military kids in every school. You ought to be having a sort of like a job fair at the base. Bring out all of your squadrons and all of your organizations to show them what they do. Invite all the educators so that they're comfortable coming on the base or the post, so that they're comfortable with the people and they meet the parents. And the parents can get engaged at varying levels. Some are going to do everything, and some are going to only be able to do a little bit. But it's that engagement that gets them used to coming on base, gets them used to talking with the military, that lets them understand deployments, lets them understand separations. You know, I grew up in an era that really wasn't that much different than now. My dad was a master sergeant in the Air Force, was a boom operator on KC-135s. That's the guy in the back who connects the airplanes and passes the gas. We used to joke that he was the only enlisted man driven to work by three officers every day. And I was very proud of that fact. And so during Vietnam, they were gone all the time. Now, it didn't last as long as the last in the Air Force, 20 years of war. We deployed with Desert Shield and really never came home. And so that separation is a constant. But if the school teachers understand that, and we can make them understand the special needs of our children, you've won half the battle. If you can get someone to adopt that school, a squadron, a group, or a wing, to adopt each one of the schools and go into the schools and volunteer where the teachers have familiarity and they're willing to come forward because there's that connective tissue, I think you've won half the battle. And the fact y'all are willing to be here says that you're willing to work with organizations like IMSEC and Dr. Keller and all the other great volunteers here to make that a reality. And I really think that will go a long way in helping our children's education and helping them stay connected in the community.
That's Lieutenant General Darrell Jones, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel, and Services for the U.S. Air Force, part of a panel discussion that happened yesterday on educating military children at the Military Child Education Coalition's 15th National Training Seminar in National Harbor, Maryland. We'll pick up with more of the discussion after a short break. This is Pentagon Solutions, brought to you by DRS Technologies. Jared Serbu filling in this week for Francis Rose.
Mobility Report is brought to you by CDWG.
A $16 million contract to build the Defense Department's mobile device management system is going to a firm in Bethesda, Maryland. Digital Management Incorporated will build a centralized system to secure and add mobile and smart devices to DoD's mobile network. The contract also includes building a DoD app store that will provide pre-approved mobile apps across the entire department. I'm Sean McCauley at Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com.
The mobile workforce. There's no doubt they're mobile, but can they work? If you're in federal IT, that's up to you. Visit cdwg.com/mobility to see how they can keep your people productive and your network secure. Sounds like a win-win. CDWG. People who get it. Visit cdwg.com to learn how SAP Aphoria mobile device management solutions optimize operations in today's mobile world.
DRS is up and running.
Monitoring a border is complex. At DRS, we've deployed technology on the Jordanian border.
DRS is proven.
With desert installations in Egypt, we thrive in the most forbidding terrain.
DRS is ready.
And in Arizona, DRS is ready with the most advanced technology. We're prepared to support the U.S. Customs and Border Protection IFT program. DRS Technologies, up, running, and ready to protect the U.S. border.
Learn more at DRS.com.
Cyber breaches are making headlines. Preventing attacks, figuring out who's attacking, and building defenses for new threats is more urgent than ever. Thought leaders from government and industry will come together to tackle the challenges and solutions. Join Federal News Radio and Merlin with partner NetApp for the panel, Cyber Solutions for 2013 and Beyond, Stopping Attacks and Navigating a Changing Landscape. Listen this Thursday at noon and learn more about Cyber Solutions for 2013 and Beyond at federalnewsradio.com. Search cyber.
The Information Management Minute, provided by Iron Mountain.
The Presidential Directive on Records Management requires federal agencies to designate a senior agency official to oversee review of their records program. NARA will oversee the SAO's actions against the directive. These officials have been identified from various functional areas, including records management, finance, operations, legal, and information technology. This cross-functional approach should help necessary insights surface and help industry work with government to modernize its approach to paper and electronic records keeping.
Is your agency looking to realize better efficiencies and cost savings through a proven information management program? Iron Mountain stores and protects billions of information assets, including paper records, backup tapes, electronic files, and medical data, helping federal agencies manage their entire information lifecycle. Learn more at ironmountain.com/radio.
I'm Emily Kopp. On Thursday's Federal Drive, we find out what's hot and what's not in government procurement. We broadcast live from the Multiple Award Government and Industry Conference in Alexandria. Stan Soloway from the Professional Services Council joins us. It starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Now your DHS News Brief, brought to you by CenturyLink. A brand new mobile device management workshop for employees at the Flood Emergency Agency. The Workplace Transformation Panel discussion focuses on how mobile devices have changed FEMA's organizational structure. It's also looking at how it's changing employee performance. You can watch the entire panel discussion on FEMA's intranet homepage.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jared Serbu sitting in for Francis all week. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions, brought to you by DRS Technologies. For this week's edition, we're bringing you a panel discussion that happened yesterday at National Harbor, Maryland. The Military Child Education Coalition's 15th National Training Seminar was the venue for this. It's a panel discussion on educating military children with three military leaders, Admiral Robert Papp, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, Lieutenant General Darrell Jones, the Deputy Chief of Staff of the Air Force for Manpower, Personnel, and Services, and Edward Cannon, the Director of Fleet and Family Readiness Programs for the Navy Installation Command. Mr. Cannon picks up the discussion where we left off.
Mr. Cannon, there's considerable pressure on you because another theme that I heard the last 2 days has been engagement. So there's one theme left, and it's up to you to tell us what that theme is.
Good morning, everyone. Again, glad to be here, thrilled to be here. The fact that MSEC holds this every year in the 15th year just tells you how powerful of an organization you are as a whole, and the fact that we're pulling in so many different disciplines here. So again, thanks for being here. I guess a couple things come from a little different perspective. I've been a civilian my whole career. Started 30 years ago last month in the quality of life arena. I'm proud of saying I'm probably the only guy or gal that's SES who started out with shorts and a whistle. I was an athletic director and a youth director, but I've dedicated my whole life to working, supporting military. I've spent time overseas as you heard, my children were both born overseas, went to Dodd School, grown up in military child care. So I'm very aware from a support side of what it takes to take care of our military. And as I mentioned, been in the business 30 years, but, you know, the Navy's been doing this for 237 years, always looking to deploy. And so our families have always had a challenge in making sure we're always ready and always prepared for that deployment. At any time, 70% of our sailors' families are either deployed or getting ready to deploy. So it's been a theme in the Navy and the Coast Guard and the Marines that we've tried to support from the beginning. So as I look at that, I would say the most important thing is to always be ready and always be looking to connect with the community. So I think to me it's that connectivity. It's looking at those partnerships. One of the things we looked at about 7 years ago was we really were missing the point with our connection with our schools. And so we got very aggressive, hired school liaisons throughout the area, not just at the installations, but at the region, so we could reach well beyond the installation, because we also know more than 70% of our families are not living on the installation. So although they may come into the base for support and they're looking for us for that support, we have to be able to move forward, step out, and make sure that we're supporting our folks from the beginning there. So that connectivity from start to finish, I think, is paramount.
Great. Well, you've hit a home run because you actually hit two of the themes as well. That the whole notion, and that's what this is all about, is supporting the families and supporting the children, and how if we're going to be taken care of by those folks who are protecting us, their kids need to be taken care of. And doing that, you engage and you get awareness through connectivity. So thank you to all three of you. Great start.
That's Dr. Bill Harrison, the Vice Chairman of the Military Child Education Coalition's Board of Directors. He hosted that panel discussion yesterday in National Harbor, Maryland at the Coalition's 15th National Training Seminar with three military leaders that we're hearing from on this hour of In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be back with more of the panel after another break. This is Pentagon Solutions, brought to you by DRS Technologies. I'm Jared Serbu, filling in this week. Back in just a minute.
This week's Experts in Health topic is energy drinks and their associated health risks, featuring Dr. Bruce Awad, a family medicine practitioner with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Falls Church Medical Center.
Many think energy drinks are a safe way to provide more energy, improve performance, and increase concentration. However, it's important to understand the risks associated with these products. First, many energy drinks contain high quantities of caffeine, which may make it difficult to sleep and lead to sleep deprivation. Second, many energy drinks have a high sugar content. This adds calories and may lead to weight gain. And finally, there is limited regulation on these beverages. Some energy drinks are classified as dietary supplements, which are not as strictly regulated as our foods. So before you reach for your next energy drink, remember these risks and keep in mind that water is always a preferred choice.
For more information, visit kpe.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Recently on Federal News Radio's Federal Tech Talk, sponsored by AT&T.
We are speaking with Mark Pietrasanta, CTO, and Sean Fitzpatrick, Principal Consultant at Aqualent. We're talking about website design for federal agencies.
What it all boils down to is understanding your user and your audiences, what they're trying to accomplish, and what kind of tasks they're trying to accomplish. And wrapping that up with rigorous user research, analysis, prototyping, and then testing with those representative user groups.
Secure Mobile Government is here.
Evaluate a department budget at a metro station.
You can now work out in the field with a smartphone and the safety and security of the AT&T network. AT&T extends the cyber defense perimeter of your agency's mobile workforce.
Study new employment stats while teleworking.
Your security is predictive and preventive. Go to att.com/gov/secure to learn how AT&T Mobile Security can safely connect you to both your agency and constituents. AT&T. Rethink possible.
DRS is up and running.
Monitoring a border is complex. At DRS, we've deployed technology on the Jordanian border.
DRS is proven.
With desert installations in Egypt, we thrive in the most forbidding terrain.
DRS is ready.
And in Arizona, DRS is ready with the most advanced technology. We're prepared to support the U.S. Customs and Border Protection IFT program. DRS Technologies, up, running, and ready to protect the U.S. border.
Learn more at DRS.com.
Riding Unrestrained. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, riding unrestrained can leave a person stuck in a hospital bed, or worse. Researcher Laurie Beck of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention tracks the use of seatbelts.
Although most people now wear seatbelts, there are still millions of people who are taking unnecessary risks by traveling unrestrained.
Beck says usage has been increasing and 87% of adults use seatbelts these days. But she says people who live in rural areas, men, teens, young adults, and nighttime travelers are less likely to buckle up. Not buckling up is illegal in most states, and it's also dangerous in a crash. Beck says seatbelts cut the risk of serious injury or death by about half. She says it's the most effective protection you can have in a vehicle if it crashes. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Come see high-profile D.C. politicos face off on the tennis court in the second annual Washington Castles Charity Classic, Thursday, July 18th. Members of Congress and administration officials join local celebrities and some of the world's best tennis players, including Martina Hingis, in a bipartisan world team tennis format match with 100% of ticket proceeds benefiting charity. For more information, visit WashingtonCastles.com or call 202-4-TENNIS.
Now your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update, afternoons at 30 minutes past the hour. If the IRS is any guide, the new NSTIC initiative could save agencies big bucks. The National Institute of Standards and Technology says the IRS could save $305 million a year by adopting an identity management system that works with NSTIC. That's short for National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, a NIST-led initiative to create a circle of trust on the Internet. NIST commissioned a study with the IRS to look at how an NSTIC-aligned system would compare with the agency's own proprietary system. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
And welcome back to the 3 o'clock hour of In Depth with Francis Rose. Jared Serbu filling in for Francis all week. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions, brought to you by DRS Technologies. We're listening this week to a panel discussion that happened yesterday in National Harbor, Maryland, focusing on the education of military-connected children. It was part of the 15th National Training Seminar of the Military Child Education Coalition. Panelists this hour are Admiral Robert Papp, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, and Lieutenant General Daryl Jones, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower of the U.S. Air Force, and Edward Cannon, the Director of Fleet and Family Readiness Programs for the Navy Installation Command. Dr. Bill Harrison is the Vice Chairman of the Military Child Education Coalition, and he is the moderator of this event.
What I'd like to do now is just see if we can have a little bit of dialogue between you. And I got to tell you that this is pretty tough for me because I typically like to talk. And I've gone over my questions this morning, and I do know all the right answers. So I'm going to give you a shot to get it right. And hopefully between the three of you, you'll get it right. If you don't, I'll let you folks know. But, you know, we talk a lot about innovation, and we're hearing an awful lot of conversations about some innovations across the nation in teaching and learning and moving pretty quickly. What do you see from your unique perspectives as promising innovations of which we've been talking, particularly regarding implications for military children? General Jones, would you like to start this meeting?
You know, it's the information age. It's the connectivity that doesn't exist, that didn't exist when we were young. When we went to a new school, to a new area, if you didn't meet one or two kids in your neighborhood, your first day of school was this daunting task. I remember my dad moved from Castle Air Force Base in California to Shreveport, Louisiana, and I was stationed in Shreveport, and I went to junior high school, and the first day I went to class, I showed up dressed like I was living in California. And I got to tell you, the people in Louisiana don't wear puffy sleeves on their shirt and things like that. And, you know, it was pretty traumatic. Well, nowadays, you figure all that out with the electronic age. You know, you're Facebooking the friends who've lived there, the people in the school. You're using technology not only on a social level, which has good and bad, but not only on a social level, so that when you step off to that first day of school, it's not as hard as it was when we were new, and that was all a brand new experience. But also with your school work, with the tutor.com, with the Raytheon program to help educate people. I mean, you can stay connected and advance your program. And back in the old days when we used to tell kids, hey, you've got to go get help, you've got to go get a tutor, that was daunting, especially if they're an introverted child. Going to get a tutor is hard. Having to actually talk to someone, you know, is quite a challenge for some children. But nowadays, it's all online. If they don't want to interact with someone, they can go online, they can get the tutoring, and we've got to push that and push those innovations to help our kids do much better in school. And I think they've got an advantage that we just didn't have.
Great.
Well, you know, there's a broad range of issues that deal with families. One of the things that Linda and I did when I first became Commandant 3 years ago is we came up with, we'd been traveling, I guess for about 6 years prior to that, in command positions, and everywhere we went, we held all hands meetings, where we would speak to the people in uniform, but also took the opportunity to meet with the families. And Linda said, you know, we've got to do something during the time we have available, in order to help the families. And we sort of went back and assessed all the various sessions that we had, and we came up with three areas. One is child development centers. The other two are housing and then ombudsman program. And we lumped those together, and I announced during my first day of the Coast Guard speech, I called it the Year of the Family. And as I gave that speech, the minute the words came out of my mouth, I said, oh, that was the wrong title, because it sort of implied we're only going to focus on this for a year. So we've changed it to our family campaign. In fact, we're getting our quarterly briefing this afternoon. And the Vice Commandant's wife, Mary Jane Currier, Linda, will all be there. And the entire headquarters staff comes down to brief us on all these issues. But even though we have these initiatives, it would be difficult to work our way through the budgetary process, getting money for housing, getting the positions for supervising ombudsman program, if we didn't have the support of the administration. So the fact that we have a First Lady and Dr. Biden who have initiated the Joining Forces program and taken their lofty position to give attention to the needs of military families, I think has gone a long way in terms of giving emphasis to us. I mean, when you can put your budget through the department to OMB and say, oh, by the way, the First Lady said this, you know, that helps out a lot, I have to tell you. So once again, like I said right up front, I'm going to keep going back to this awareness issue, and all of us can find the time, I think, to get out and use whatever pulpit we have to increase the awareness, not only within our services, within the administration, but also the public and the communities in which we serve.
Cannon, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, adding to that innovation, I think the one thing that really jumps out to me and is very powerful is the Interstate Compact. Really helped a lot. You can't necessarily call that innovation in the sense that it's not a new technology, but it's allowing states to share information. It's allowing our children, when they move from one place to the other, for families to understand from one state to the other how we can all connect there. So that's really been a powerful tool. One example that just came up recently is we had a Navy recruiter going out to Pittsburgh. So he's not connected with a Navy base. First thing when he goes to sign his children up for the school says, well, you're going to have to pay X amount of dollars, even though it's a state school, because we don't have you registered in this state. And it took our school liaison officer meeting with the school district, educating them as well, because even though you have the compact, now we have to have people that are going to follow through on what this compact is asking or telling them to actually do. So that's been really powerful in pulling that connection together. Because we were able to do that, the good news story is he didn't have to pay as he shouldn't have from the beginning. But the fact was that just added an extra stressor as he's trying to do his job and make sure his family is set up. But from an innovation standpoint, a couple other areas that I'm very proud of, and I'm sure the other services all have some great examples as well, but our partnerships with MSEC, as many of you are aware of, but also with the University of Southern California and with Old Dominion University, two of our large fleet concentration areas, where we're having some of the best and brightest young, energetic interns that are coming and working with us, doing social work, and making sure that they're connected with the school, walking through the process if you're an exceptional family member. And then lastly, one of the main innovations that we've done that's just been so powerful, and we're working at seeing how we can spread it further, is in our some of our California bases, we've moved our family service centers, our fleet and family service center personnel, not only on the base, but now we've moved them into housing areas, working with our public-private venture. So we actually have remote sites where you can come in and have a family services counseling meeting as opposed to having to come back to the base. That's really allowed us to, A, reach out further in the community, but B, get them closer to the schools as well. So now you've really kind of connected the dots along the way there, and that's really proven to be very, very powerful. And then lastly, in that same theme, we know that it's not just SLOs, or it's not just the Child Development Center, or it's not just one agency. It's how do you pull all these together? So we know we have a booth, I guess it's right over there, Safe Harbor, Navy and Coast Guard Safe Harbor Program. We've now learned that some of our families, once they become wounded, feel a little disconnected from the rest of the base. And having that Safe Harbor Program now come under Navy Installations Command has really helped us pull that together. The Fisher House as well is another program that I'm sure many of you know of, but I'm very proud of the fact that this year it transferred to Navy Installations Command. And one of the things that was really exciting was we just found out, or we've known this, but we really pulled the connection together that we have 26 children living in our Fisher Houses right there in Bethesda. They're only there for, it might be 90 days, it might be for 6 months. But you talk about someone who's going through a traumatic experience just trying to live with mom or dad in a different state, but now to also transfer a different school. So having the Safe Harbor, the Fisher House, the MWR program, child care, all working together and meeting and discussing these situations has been, I think, just leaps and bounds an improvement in the program.
That's Edward Cannon, the Director of Fleet and Family Readiness Programs for Navy Installation Command, talking yesterday as part of a panel of the Military Child Education Coalition's 15th National Training Seminar in National Harbor, Maryland. We'll come back and hear more from the panel after a break. This is Pentagon Solutions, brought to you by DRS Technologies. I'm Jared Servin.
VAE Systems, we always focus on keeping troops safe. One challenge military pilots face, it's called a brownout. When helicopter pilots confront dust storms or fog, the risk of collision is much higher. That's why we created a technology that lets pilots see terrain and obstacles through these conditions. Knowing our work helps to save lives inspires us every day. We'll be there on the next front. That's VAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at vaesystems.com/nextfront.
battlegrounds change, front lines evolve, but defense does not stop. How will you face down new threats with fewer dollars? Turn to Deloitte. We help leaders from CEOs to four-star generals deliver innovative, efficient solutions. With our private sector insight and public sector experience in technology, supply chain, analytics, and more, we'll help you shape the future of the DoD. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Are you a government contractor? Federal News Radio wants to know how sequestration is affecting you. Take our anonymous survey today. Tell us, how have you or your company been positively or negatively impacted by the cuts? Are you concerned about sequestration in 2014 and beyond? Good, bad, unexpected, indifferent, we'd like to hear your sequestration stories. Results of the survey will be published as part of a special report in July. Find the survey at federalnewsradio.com. Search sequestration survey.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jared Servi sitting in for Francis. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions, brought to you by DRS Technologies. And now your Federal News Radio DoD report, brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. An Army private's leak of classified information to WikiLeaks changed how the public, the government, and traditional news media perceive the anti-secrecy organization, a Harvard law professor testified today. Private First Class Bradley Manning's lawyers called Yochai Benkler to testify about the government's response to WikiLeaks' publication of Iraq and Afghanistan battlefield reports. Before that material was published, starting in April 2010, major newspapers and a Pentagon report generally portrayed WikiLeaks as a new kind of journalistic organization, he said. But after WikiLeaks began publishing the hundreds of thousands of battlefield reports Manning leaked, that perception inside the Pentagon changed substantially, he testified today. That's your DoD report, brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes after the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now back to our coverage of a panel discussion that happened yesterday in National Harbor, Maryland. This was part of the Military Child Education Coalition's 15th National Training Seminar. Panelists, including Admiral Robert Papp, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, Lieutenant General Daryl Jones, the Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel, and Services for the U.S. Air Force, and Edward J. Cannon, the Director for Fleet and Familyness Readiness Programs at the Navy Installation Command. Dr. Bill Harrison, the Vice Chairman of the Military Child Education Coalition's Board of Directors, moderated the panel.
You started out with the compact, the interstate compact, and it shouldn't have to be considered to be innovative getting states to come to agreements on things, but it certainly is. And you talked about some public-private partnerships, and it certainly is. And how can we do some of these things? How can we become engaged, and we can use technology to make some of these things happen? So, you know, we kind of have 50 states out there. I think we're getting a little bit better at the state level, but 50 sets of state standards, and every state is absolutely convinced that theirs are the toughest standards. So the Common Core, and one of the things that we've talked a little bit about is this unique identifier that sometimes, you know, around your bases where you folks are calling home, we know who our military children are. But we've got kids who are children of recruiters and guard and reserve out there all across the nation that we don't know that are military connected kids. So we really need to take different ways of looking at this. As we think about those youngsters out there, what advice would you offer to those who work with children, those in these rooms, teachers, support programs, that would help them reach every child and lay the groundwork for fostering and encouraging all children to find and cultivate talent to be persistent to achieve. So basically how to let kids pursue their dream and get at it and stick with it. Mr. Cannon, do you want to start on that one?
This is probably the wrong audience to tell this to, because you're probably already all doing it. But be the model. Be out there. Be in front. And make sure that other people know how important it is to have that connection with the community, to go to the PTA, PTSA, to be part from the beginning. One of the things that the Navy has always prided itself on is we have a decentralized program where we really put a lot of authority and allow a lot of creativity to our local commands. And one of the things that we found is that they're more than willing and more than able to get out in front and meet with the leaders and make sure that they really are engaged, whether it's making sure that your child gets equal support when you're trying out for a sports team or for the band, or, again, making sure that your records get transferred properly. So, again, probably talking to the wrong audience here, because you know that, and you're pushing that on a regular basis. But if you can get it to those others and be that mentor and be that leader so others know how important it is to be engaged from the beginning.
Will either the other two like to take a shot at that one?
I think the path that you get your program started is very important. You know, you can walk up to the headquarters building and figure out how to get in and see the commander. And all of us have really accomplished moat dragons that we pay large amounts of money to keep people outside the door.
Superintendents have them too.
That's right. So that you can do your meeting. So how do you get past the moat dragons? And the way you do that at your installation or your post or your base is to go through the spouse network. You know, the spouse network for getting things accomplished is hugely important. And they can take that message when you decide, you know, how you want to support your schools, how you want to get the orientations going. If you go through the spouse network, I guarantee you it will get the right hearing, and you're going to get in a lot quicker than if you try to get on someone's calendar or you try to pitch a program, and some of y'all are smiling and shaking your head because you know exactly what I'm talking about. That is the way to get in the door. So once you talk about that and get in the door, I think the thing that I would also add is that we've got to be really careful with the record we play in our head. And when I say the record we play in our head and our children's head, I guess I should update that by saying the CD or maybe the MP3 or maybe the podcast. I'm not sure. But I was talking to somebody the other day, and we're talking about moving, and they said, well, you know, it's really going to be tough on our children. It's really going to be hard. You know, they're going to have all these challenges. And I was sort of going, well, wait a minute. This is a great opportunity. You know, we have to have that positive record in our mind that there are challenges to being military children, but military children are not challenged. You know, we have to look at the bright side. We have to look at the fact that I remember our son coming back from a school one time, and he said, Dad, we were talking about history and all these places, and he said, and every time the teacher asked, has anybody ever been there, he said, I was the only person raising my hand. He said, have these people never left the city? You know, those are great opportunities that we have to play on the positive things about the fact that we learn how to interact with people. One day, one of the officers in our squadron came to me and said, Daryl, I want to tell you that your youngest son is the nicest person in the world. And I sort of looked at him and said, really? And he takes after his mother. And he said, yes, because every day at the school bus, his daughter, they were new to the area, and he said, our daughter's the only girl at the school bus. And all the rest of their guys. And your son goes over and talks to her every morning.
Lieutenant General Daryl Jones is the Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel, and Services for the U.S. Air Force. He spoke yesterday alongside Admiral Robert Papp, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, and Edward Cannon, the Director for Fleet and Family Readiness Programs at Navy Installation Command. It was part of a panel discussion at the Military Child Education Coalition's National Training Seminar in National Harbor, Maryland yesterday. We'll finish up the hour with one more segment from that panel after one more break. This is Pentagon Solutions, brought to you by DRS Technologies. I'm Jared Serbin.
You can join State Department Federal Credit Union today and enjoy a $50 bonus, and that's just the beginning of your benefits. Take advantage of an SDFCU free checking account and earn rewards points just by using your debit card. That's right, rewards with your debit card. You'll have access to 29,000 ATMs, mobile deposit, and option to design your own card. Get your $50 bonus and rewards. Visit joinsdfcu.org. That's joinsdfcu.org.
SDFCU is federally insured by NCUA.
DRS is up and running.
Monitoring a border is complex. At DRS, we've deployed technology on the Jordanian border.
DRS is proven.
With desert installations in Egypt, we thrive in the most forbidding terrain.
DRS is ready.
And in Arizona, DRS is ready with the most advanced technology. We're prepared to support the U.S. Customs and Border Protection IFT program. DRS Technologies, up, running, and ready to protect the U.S. border.
Learn more at DRS.com.
The awards and opportunities of modernizing federal IT networks. A panel discussion with experts from government and industry. Sponsored by Brocade. And now panelist Tom Bayer, CIO for Securities and Exchange Commission.
We look at the security of the network and look at how we will be protecting that network and also designing it for high availability. It's important that the systems are up and available 99.99% of the time. So it's important we have adequate capacity to support them. And then also that we're looking to the network of the future. Data is getting larger, the data sets are larger, and so you have to change your network to support the transport of more data more efficiently and effectively at higher rates of speed than what we've ever seen in the past.
Join federal IT executives at the 2013 Federal Forum, hosted by Brocade, as they share their insights and best practices on how to implement and manage federal agency networks of the future. August 6th at the Ronald Reagan Building. Register today for the complimentary Federal Forum at federalforum2013.com. Let's get down to brass tacks. There's nothing more important than trust. CenturyLink offers cybersecurity solutions to the government. And the Department of Homeland Security has approved CenturyLink to provide enhanced cybersecurity services to critical infrastructure entities to keep you efficient and secure. As your trusted technology partner, their visionary cloud infrastructure, global broadband network, along with custom communication solutions and responsive dedicated support, provide the scalable solutions you need 24/7, 365. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
The Federal News Radio United Way Charity of the Month is Our House, an organization that serves America's forgotten children, boys, abused, abandoned, orphaned, homeless. Our House provides them a home, an education, job skills, and hope. Help give a child a future at the Our House Fundraiser Gala, Friday, September 20th, in the Lockheed Martin lobby of the Music Center at Strathmore in Bethesda. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. As we finish up the 3 o'clock hour, Pentagon Solutions brought to you by DRS Technologies. Listening back to a panel that happened yesterday at the Gaylord National Hotel in National Harbor, Maryland. This was part of the Military Child Education Coalition's 15th National Training Seminar. Panelists we're hearing from are Admiral Robert Papp, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, Lieutenant General Darrell Jones, Deputy Chief of Staff of the Air Force, and Edward Cannon, the Director of Fleet and Family Readiness Programs for Navy Installation Command. The moderator, Dr. Bill Harrison, the Vice Chairman of the Military Child and Education Coalition's Board of Directors.
I think we have about 10 minutes, and I have about six more questions, but Lanny has a hook over there, and it hurts, and he's used it. So I'm going to ask one question. If we have a little more time, we'll do it, and I'm going to start with you, Admiral Rapp, and you can follow up on that one if you like. You can say anything that you want to say, and I think this is kind of a wide-open question. Back in January of 2011, Secretary Arne Duncan, who's going to be with us at lunchtime, said, "Everyone I talk to," this is a quote, "everyone I talk to shares my sense of urgency that we have to do better for our children. We're fighting for our country here," end quote. In closing, what can we in this room, and this is your call to action, do to respond to Secretary Duncan and make it happen?
I like to use the phrase, you need to get outside the lifelines. And what I mean by that is I'm a sailor. And on your ship, as you go out on the open deck, there are lifelines that go around the entire ship that protect you from falling overboard. It's something that you can grab onto. And as I go around from unit to unit and I do these all-hands meetings, I often ask for the commanding officers to identify some top performers. And generally, they're very good within their specialty, of course, and they're good leaders. But the best of the best, when I read their resumes and their accomplishments, they have reached outside the lifeline as well, and they've gone out into the community. And whether it's Habitat for Humanity or working with the school board or working at the food at the homeless shelter or the food bank, Coasties are always out there reaching out in the community. And I think this is probably, if I can say it's a discriminator for the Coast Guard, is we are often stationed small units around the country in the community. So I think more than any of the other services, and granted, whether it's recruiters or other things, they have small places where they're located. But routinely for us, we're right in the community. So because we come in and we're transient, these top performers always like to reach out into the community and help out, so that they can quickly become a part of that community as well. And I would say the reverse is true for those people that are permanently in that community, the educators and others, is step outside your lifelines as well. Reach out to the local unit, reach out to the base, and see if there's ways that you can get involved, or if nothing else, become more familiar, more aware by visiting the unit, seeing what goes on there, see where the children live, the types of facilities and resources they have available, and really educating yourself in terms of what the unique challenges are for our children.
Great response. There's danger in the comfort zone, and we need to get outside of those lifelines. Great. General Jones.
I really agree with Admiral Papp. You know, we all have comfort zones, and getting outside of those allow us to do things and multiply our effects. If you get your network together, there are people in there that can offset your weaknesses with their strengths. You know, if you're not good at reaching out to people in the community you don't know, talking to strangers, there are people who are dying to talk to somebody in your organization. And identify them and ask them to go out and touch the folks whose spouse is deployed. Bring those children in and identify the needs they might have. But reaching out, as Admiral Papp says, is one of the most important things we can do to help our community, because we all know we're just one big community, no matter what uniform we wear, whether it's the Army uniform, the Navy uniform, or this really good-looking one that Admiral Papp and I wear.
Mr. Cannon.
Thank you. Well, I'm wearing purple so that I'm joint here, so that's my uniform. Also, MSEC's colors. Even if I wanted to, couldn't argue with either of these gentlemen here, agree completely with the lifelines. You know, when I look at it, it is reaching out. You've heard me say it before, but I look around and I see the 58 SLOs. I see the 75 MPLEX that we have. I look throughout the whole spectrum, almost 3,000 ombudsmen that we have, and I'm honored and privileged that my boss, Vice Admiral French, his wife is the ombudsman at large for the Navy, and so we're meeting on a regular basis about how can we make sure we're connecting with the spouses, how can we make sure that we're really tying all these loose ends together. So I try to stress on a regular basis to our team, called the N9 team, which is Fleet and Family Readiness, that it's that one touch point in MWR where we're pushing for family fitness centers. It's child care, where we're not only looking for expanding child care, which we've, as many of the services have done, but it's also making sure we have that outreach, working with the YMCA to make sure that those that are not connected directly to a base have another venue. It's looking at the safe harbor and all those other areas that I talked about before. So I think the lifeline is a great metaphor and a great example of how we need to make sure that we never forget that, and don't think that we're in this alone, because it really is that whole community that pulls it together.
That's Edward Cannon, the Director of Fleet and Family Readiness Programs for Navy Installation Command. Wrapping up a panel that happened yesterday in National Harbor, Maryland, part of the Military Child Education Coalition's 15th National Training Seminar. You heard during that hour from Admiral Robert Papp, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, Lieutenant General Darrell Jones, Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel, and Services for the U.S. Air Force, and Mr. Cannon, who's the Director of Fleet and Family Readiness Programs for Navy Installation Command. This is Pentagon Solutions. Brought to you by DRS Technologies. 4 o'clock hours just around the corner after AP Radio News. Back in just a few minutes, I'm Jared Serbu, filling in for Francis this week. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.